Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. With the election just a few days away, this week on Radio Boston, we're talking with each of the four candidates for Massachusetts governor. On Tuesday, we spoke with the Democratic incumbent, Deval Patrick. Yesterday, it was the Green Rainbow candidate, Jill Stein. Today, Republican Charlie Baker. Before this campaign, Baker was CEO of Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. He says taxes are too high and government needs streamlining. And his message has hit home with many voters. Polls have consistently shown him in close competition with Governor Patrick, the frontrunner, but Baker has had to answer tough questions about his role in the Big Dig, and although he's polling near Patrick, he continues to linger slightly behind. Charlie Baker joins us now to talk about why he thinks he deserves to be the next governor of Massachusetts. Charlie Baker, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. And listeners, again, we have Charlie Baker with us. We are talking about anything you want to talk about if you want to call in and have questions or comments. When Deval Patrick was elected 16 years ago, that ended Republican... I'm sorry, when Deval Patrick was elected 4 years ago, that ended...
It's been a long time, longer than I thought.
Exactly. That ended 16 years of Republican control of the Massachusetts governor's office. Charlie Baker, you say it's time to give that control back, and you say you're the guy to give it to. Listeners, we want to know if you think Charlie Baker should get that control, and if you have questions for him, you can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Charlie Baker, you've said that you want to cut taxes, but you're also saying you won't hurt local aid if you're elected governor. How can you do both of those things?
Well, I've said since I got into this race that I think the big problem we face is what I call the pocketbook stuff, jobs, taxes, and spending. As most people know, Massachusetts is in the midst of a down economy. And just last month, Massachusetts lost 21,000 jobs. It was the single largest job loss in any month in 20 years. And I think it was the largest job loss on a per capita basis in the country. The month before that, in August, we also lost jobs. And the state faces a $2 billion deficit next year, which the governor isn't acknowledging, but virtually everybody else is. And I just look at the whole thing, and it says to me that we need a change in direction. We need to go in a different direction if we really want to balance that state budget, create a climate for growth, deal with our tax burden, and get those people who are out of work back to work. And the governor says he thinks we're heading in the right direction. And, I, you know, as I've said for a while now, I think if voters believe we're heading in the right direction, then they should vote for the governor because he agrees with them.
To go back to the original question, how do you cut taxes and also not hurt local aid?
Well, you start by reforming and restructuring state government. I started putting proposals on things we could do to reform and restructure state government on the table months ago, and they were ignored by the governor and virtually everybody else on Beacon Hill.
Which ones are you thinking of?
Well, I put 13 items that were worth about $1 billion on the table in maybe March. And part of my argument at the time was if we didn't start to do things to reform and restructure state government and lower our rate of spending, we would end up with a big deficit next year. And nobody pursued any of those ideas, and here we sit with a big deficit next
year. Charlie Baker, for those who haven't seen those, why don't you tell us the top two?
Well, it's called the Baker's Dozen. It's about 13 items, and there's a bunch of items on it, but it includes things like giving cities and towns the ability to adjust their health insurance plans without basically using the same rules the state has, which would save cities and towns about $100 million. Not limiting the bidding on public construction projects, state public construction projects, to union-only bidders, and giving the 75% of the construction industry that is non-union the ability, and pays taxes, by the way, the ability to bid on all public jobs instead of only those that are deemed appropriate for them. That would save somewhere around $50 million, 50 to 100, depending upon who's doing the math. Pension reform. I've been talking about real pension reform to deal with the state's deficit and its pension system, which at this point most people acknowledge is north of $20 billion. Huge problem, getting bigger every year. Every taxpayer is contributing every year to the state's pension fund, and at the same time, the taxpayers are putting in over $1 billion a year. The deficit in the fund continues to get bigger. Depending upon what reform plan you pass, you could probably save $50 or $75 million a year there. have also talked about changing and restructuring retiree health insurance, which is another problem that runs north of $15 to $18 billion in deficit and needs to be reined in and brought under control.
Charlie Baker, let me jump in because we have many questions for you. I have many questions for you, and callers already have many questions for you. So let me early on open up the phone lines. We have Carla from Braintree who has a question about your pledge that you want to cut taxes. And Carla, what's your question for Charlie Baker?
Charlie, how are you?
Hey, Carla, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Charlie, the thing about cutting taxes, I know people have said that your bar is too high, you're shooting too high for wanting to cut taxes and spending, and they say there's no way that with a Democratic legislature you'll be able to do that. And it seems to me that you've had a history of success in the private and public sector already getting things done, tough things. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what is your strategy to work with the Democratic legislature to get your agenda through?
Well, I think the first thing I would say about this, Carla, is that I'm not going to raise taxes. I took that position straight out of the gate, and I believe that that's fundamental to reforming state government. Governor Patrick proposed tax increases every year he was governor, and the minute you put new revenue into the conversation, you lose your capacity and your ability to make the case for reform. And I've talked to enough people about the current state of the Commonwealth's fiscal condition who are in the legislature. I've talked to people who are paying attention to these issues, you know, independent third-party watchdogs and the like, and everybody knows that the state has enormous problems on the fiscal side, and then something's got to happen here. And my view is that if I draw the box and say we need to reform state government, we're not going back to the taxpayers, I think that creates a big opening for reform, and I'm going to pursue it. And I think the, you know, Exhibit A on this is Chris Christie in New Jersey. He's a Republican governor elected in a blue state with a Democratic legislature. He inherited a big budget deficit from a Democratic incumbent. And over the course of 6 months, he reduced an $11 billion deficit on about a $30 billion budget to zero without going back to the taxpayers.
And I think and Charlie Baker, you think even with the Democratic House and Senate, you can do that?
I do, because I do, and the main reason I say that is I believe as long as I'm committed to not raising taxes and I'm committed to carrying that reform agenda forward and making the case for reform, I believe we can sell it to the legislature.
Let me have another person ask you a question. This is Bill from Bridgewater. And Bill, what's your question for Charlie Baker?
Hi, Charlie. Thanks.
Hey, Bill.
And thanks for having me on. My question is, you know, Deval Patrick promised us all property tax relief and obviously didn't even act on it. In Bridgewater, we were forced to pass an override after many local aid cuts, and you know, property taxes are just really you know, on top of people right now. You know, what can you do as governor to enact property tax relief?
Thanks for the question, Bill. I mean, one of the things I've said for months now is that by not doing some of the hard things that could have been done on Beacon Hill to reform state government and reduce state spending, the Patrick administration ended up instead cutting local aid and pushing a lot of their problems off onto the cities and towns. Cities and towns have absorbed about $700 million in local aid cuts over the last 4 years, and that's translated into 3,200 fewer teachers working today than were working in Massachusetts 4 years ago, along with reductions in cops and firefighters and other local services. So problem number one is by not reforming state government and not taking a hard run at thinking differently about state government, how it works, and taking advantage of some of the opportunities to get rid of wasteful spending, the state ended up under the Patrick administration really socking it to cities and towns.
Charlie Baker, instead of talking about the Patrick administration, if it were a Baker administration, how would you, as the listener asks, how would you try to provide property tax relief?
Well, I already gave you three ideas on this one, and you go back to some of the ideas we were talking about before that were proposals that I made last spring to deal with the state budget deficit, which would take pressure off local aid cuts. And in addition to that, we also talked about giving cities and towns more flexibility with regard to how they manage their health insurance benefits. $100 million in savings would protect a lot of jobs and provide a lot of opportunity for relief at the local level. And I've talked primarily about the income tax, the sales tax, and business taxes over this campaign. The governor promised to reduce the property tax when he got elected 4 years ago. He never pursued it. He cut local aid. That led to a lot of property tax increases. And as we sit here today, across most communities in Massachusetts, property taxes are up by about 11%, even though home values are down by about 10%. So the governor made a promise that he didn't deliver on.
So, Charlie Baker, you think you can provide the property tax relief that the governor hasn't been able to?
I certainly believe I can do a better job of supporting local government than the governor has.
But do you think you can reduce property taxes?
I'm more interested in the income tax, the sales tax, and business tax.
Well, let's talk about those, because we have a caller who wants to ask about exactly those things, and this is Richard from Holyoke. Richard, what's your question for Charlie Baker?
Oh, thank you for having me on. Yeah, I have a question. I've been following this pretty closely, at least I like to think so. So, Charlie, you have said that you oppose question three. You've said it numerous times that you've come out against it because, you know, it'll have devastating impact on our local services. But your plan to reduce it to 5% sales tax, according to the Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation, will have the same effect on our budget. Yet you haven't been able to explain how you would close that or why you would oppose one and support another when they would do the same thing. Could you just explain that?
Yeah, the question three is $2.5 billion on top of the $2 billion deficit that Governor Patrick is leaving for the next governor. And I've said all along that that's too much too fast. I do believe, however, that reducing our income tax to 5, our business tax to 5, and our sales tax back to 5 is the right strategy for Massachusetts, and that's the one I'm going to pursue over the course of my 4 years. And I know I got to make the case to the legislature to make that work, but the fundamental point I would make here to your readers or to your listeners, Sasha, is Governor Patrick's going to raise taxes. It's pretty clear that he's going to do that. I'm going to hold the line on taxes and work to reduce taxes over the course of my 4 years and continue to work to reduce the size and scope of state government. And I think that's a fundamental difference between the two of us.
Listeners, we're talking to Charlie Baker, the Republican candidate for governor. You can call in with your questions or comments at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Charlie Baker, earlier today, a tweet came in from a listener who wanted us to put a question to you. This listener goes by the name Wonderfully. He asks, what programs would you cut if question three passes? So if the sales tax is slashed from 6.25 to 3, what programs would you cut?
I think pretty much everything would have to be part of that conversation, and I've said that all along. And one of the reasons I don't support question three, but I do support my 5-5 and 5 strategy, is because of the significance of and the scope and the speed with which question three gets implemented. And it does come on top of a $2 billion deficit that that if I win, I'll be inheriting from this governor. And that would mean that virtually everything and state government would have to be on the table.
Let's move beyond the tax issue. We have a caller who wants to ask you about some social issues, and this is Virginia from Winchester. And Virginia, what is your question for Charlie Baker?
Hi. I have not been paying that much attention. Actually, the other caller said he'd been paying a lot of attention. I've only really heard about all the economic issues, and I have a pretty good idea where Deval Patrick stands on certain issues, social issues, but I'd like to hear where Charlie Baker stands. Specifically, Massachusetts has one of the strongest gun control laws in the state, in the country, and I'd like to know his stand on gun control. I'd like to know his stand on the death penalty. I would like to know his stand on abortion rights. And this is sort of a social issue, but I think, and I think I even saw this in a debate, but I've forgotten, what is his opinion about gambling?
Virginia, thanks for that. Off the air, sure. So, Charlie Baker, there were four things there. Let's break them down.
Okay,
you want to address gun?
Let's do gun control first? Let's start from the bottom and work our way up.
Sure. So the bottom is gambling.
On gambling, my position all along has been I could see why we would want to pursue one casino, one resort casino in Massachusetts. There are a lot of people who go to Connecticut and Rhode Island. I think more than that, you start to put tremendous pressure on established businesses in Massachusetts that compete for that entertainment dollar. The idea of three resort casinos or five gaming sites, which is what the governor's position is and the position of the legislature, I think that's too much. I would much rather go into this on an incremental basis, because nobody really knows what the sort of negative implications of all this will be if we jump into it with both feet. I also don't think it's a fundamental strategy for solving our economic issues, but I could certainly see doing something modest on this and putting it out to bid and giving the various regions and the communities in Massachusetts are interested in this an opportunity to vote on it.
The caller also asked about abortion.
Yeah, no. My position on abortion, I believe, is consistent with the positions of several of the other candidates. I'm a pro-choice candidate, but I do oppose partial birth abortion, and I also support parental notification. I think the next one she asked about was the death penalty.
Yes.
I support the death penalty in certain circumstances. I thought the legislation that was debated back in the late 90s was a bill I would have supported. That was the one that lost, I think, by one vote in the House after somebody changed their vote after it had passed the House and passed the Senate. And the final one was gun control. Massachusetts has some of the strictest gun control laws in the country. I think our gun control laws, we need to spend more time focusing on enforcing the laws we have, since many of the guns that are used in crimes are guns that aren't registered and are basically just completely off the books and don't belong to people who are licensed to carry in the first place.
So do you think guns should be in a searchable, publicly accessible database for people who have a firearms license?
I'm sorry, ask that one again.
Do you think that for people who have firearms licenses in the state that they should also have to register in a publicly accessible, searchable database?
No, I think our gun control laws are perfectly adequate as they are, and what we ought to do is a lot more. We ought to be a lot more aggressive about enforcing the laws we have. And frankly, we ought to do a better job than the governor's done in supporting district attorneys and supporting local communities. I mean, law enforcement almost across the board has taken a tremendous hit over the course of the past 3 or 4 years, and I believe that that's been to the detriment of a lot of the folks who depend on our law enforcement personnel to protect them and provide a safe and secure environment in their communities.
Let's talk a bit about healthcare, which is particularly relevant for you since you're the former CEO of Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Rising insurance premiums, as you know, has been a huge issue. Earlier this year, Deval Patrick had sued the health insurers when they wanted to hike the premiums into the 30% hike rate. Would you have taken that path? Would you have sued the insurers to try to protect consumers from premium increases? Many of those cases have settled and the premiums have hiked, but not for quite as much as they had proposed.
Many of the plans appealed the governor's decision and won when the governor's own people agreed that the plan's position was more appropriate and more legally correct than his was. I don't think the governor was serious about health care cost control over the course of the past 4 years. I think many of the decisions he made actually drove up the cost of health insurance for small businesses. I thought what he did this year was an election year gimmick. I said so at the time, and I continue to believe that. And if you look at the premium increases that many small businesses are facing for January of this fiscal year, they're back up in the double digits again, because what the governor proposed was not a permanent fix. It was just a temporary sort of gimmick to get through the election. I think the big opportunity in health care costs, and I've said this for several years, mostly to deaf ears on people on Beacon Hill, is we need a far more transparent healthcare system than the one we have now.
Charlie Baker, you made reference to the Patrick administration pushing up healthcare costs. In what way do you think the administration did that?
Well, the whole point of healthcare reform, especially for small businesses, was more options, more choices, and more products and lower prices. And the way the Patrick administration implemented healthcare reform, it was more mandates, more regulations, fewer options, and fewer choices. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who work for small businesses in Massachusetts who can no longer purchase plans they were perfectly happy with before healthcare reform, because the Patrick administration said they didn't meet the state standards. And most of those were affordable plans that had served people pretty well for a long period of time.
Do you think they
ended up having increased the cost of their coverage by 20 or 30% as a result.
Would you trim back in some way the health care reforms that Massachusetts has done, including the expansion of health insurance for people who now have it who didn't before?
I think the big thing we need to put on the table is the answer is the current way of doing everything is not sustainable. And again, I made a series of proposals as part of my Baker's Dozen that dealt specifically with this. I think we need to be the big thing I think we need to do is to be far more aggressive about creating a more transparent system. Nobody knows anything about price and performance in healthcare. There is no public disclosure. There is no public accountability. And I think that's a huge problem if you're serious about dealing with the cost question.
And does transparency alone bring down costs, or how does making things transparent actually control or bring down the costs?
Well, think of it this way. Right now, the way the system works, you know, you head 20 minutes in any direction from where your studio is. You get the same service from 4 or 5 different providers, and the cost of that service is going to vary by as much as 500%.
So you think people could be smarter shoppers if they knew?
I just think that the mere fact that somebody who does something for $200 on the provider side gets no credit for it, right? And the person or the provider who does it for $1,000, same thing, gets no grief. I mean, there is no public accountability in the current system. There's no reason or rationale or incentive for anybody on the provider side to be a low-cost provider. And I think that creates all by itself an incredible incentive for people to be to be more expensive rather than less expensive. And if we really want to engage this conversation, I think we need to make people publicly accountable for what they charge.
Another healthcare question. Governor Patrick was on the show Tuesday. The issue of global payments came up. This, of course, is the basic idea would be a cap on how much a doctor can spend on each patient per year. Am I correct? He supports that idea. Am I correct to say you do not support that idea?
I don't think it's a blatant or a blanket solution to the problem. And when the governor talks about it, he talks about it in 4 and 5 year increments. I think people need solutions and relief with regard to healthcare costs a lot more quickly than 4 or 5 years. I guess the other thing I would say about it, we had a global payment system for all intents and purposes back in the late 1990s.
And do now in many cases.
People hated it. And, you know, the idea that this is going to solve our problem the second time through, 4 or 5 years from now, I'd like to move a little more quickly than that and try and get some stuff in place that's a lot more meaningful than 4 or 5 years from now.
We're talking to Charlie Baker, the Republican candidate for governor. We're taking your calls at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Charlie Baker, I'm going to go back to some callers. One of them is John calling from downtown Boston. And John, what's your question for Charlie Baker?
Good afternoon, Mr. Baker. I have one question for you, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. I have one quick question for you, sir.
How are you doing, John?
I'm, you know, hanging in there, you know, doing my thing, trying to do the best I can.
Good.
John, Mr. Baker, I wanted to know, in one of your commercials, one of the very first commercials that came out, you talked about slashing 5,000 state jobs. Can you elaborate for me what exactly you mean by 5,000 state jobs?
State government has about 100 operating agencies. The structure is sort of circa 1970. It's basically the structure that was put in place in the Sargent administration. And over the course of the past several years during the fiscal crisis, despite all the rainy day fund money and federal stimulus money, the decision state government has made and the Patrick administration's made is to cut local aid and cut stuff at the program level. I think what we should be doing instead is consolidating agencies and simplifying what I call the bureaucracy and the administration of government. That's where there's a big opportunity, I believe, to not only make state government smaller, but to make it more effective. And the other thing I'd say about this is when I talk about some of the difficult decisions I think we need to make to reform and restructure state government, by making those decisions, we get to protect things like local aid. I mean, if I have a choice between significantly shrinking the bureaucracy and dealing with the... And I admire and like a lot of the people who work in state government, but I simply think it's too big and complicated. If we pursue that strategy, one of the things we don't have to do is to cut local aid by $700 million and leave 3,200 teachers on the streets, which is what we've done over the last 4 years.
Charlie Baker, we had a question post on our website from a listener which basically provides a follow-up question to this one. So let me read this one to you.
Okay.
This is a listener named Eric, and he says, Baker has talked about cutting 5,000 state jobs. At this time of high unemployment, isn't that counterproductive? The private sector isn't going to pick these folks up quickly, and that means they'll be unemployed, collecting benefits, spending less, and not working to provide services to their fellow citizens.
Yeah, except that if you don't make the decisions to simplify the bureaucracy and shrink the size of the state government, what you end up doing instead is what Governor Patrick did, which is you cut local aid by $700 million, and you end up with 3,000 teachers out of work. And if I have a choice between doing one or the other, I'm going to shrink the size of the bureaucracy because I think most people would rather see teachers working in classrooms and cops patrolling, cops work in the streets. That's the choice as far as I see it, and I think the governor made the wrong call.
Another question that came out on a website from a listener, this one on a different topic. This is a listener named Rich, and here's what he wrote. Earlier in the campaign, Mr. Baker said he, quote, didn't know enough, end quote, about climate change to say whether it was man-made or even happening at all. Has he had an opportunity to educate himself further on this issue?
Well, the question was never about whether or not it was happening at all. I mean, like everyone else, I agree that there's no doubt about the fact that the climate, the globe is, the countries, the world is getting warmer. Climate's getting hotter. The question that I was asked was whether or not I believed it was entirely man-made. And my answer to that was I didn't know, and that's still my answer. I do believe man has a role to play in this, but I think man's role is not completely defined or understood. And for people who think this is an unusual position, I just refer them back to the front page of the Boston Globe back in April when the Boston Globe put two very well-known professors, Richard Lindzen and Kerry Emanuel, both of whom work in the atmospherics department at MIT, on the front page of the Globe. I think it was in May, not April, and basically said that these guys used to be friends. They were both global warming skeptics. But now one of them thinks global warming is man-made and for real, and the other one continues to be a skeptic. And these are, you know, the question is not whether or not there's global warming. The question is what's causing it and what to do about it. And on that one, I'm not a skeptic so much as I am somebody who believes there are a lot of opinions out there among a lot of very smart people, and we should be careful about ignoring both sides of the conversation.
Another environmental question. On Cape Wind, you've made very clear that while you think it's a good idea to try to pursue alternative energy sources, you think Cape Wind is simply much, much too expensive, too many subsidies. It's not the right way to go, not the right route to go.
Yep.
You've talked about trying to get renewable energy from Canada, Hydro-Québec. What about people who think that actually sends money and jobs out of country when we should be doing more to be creating jobs here?
Well, the most important thing we should be doing with employment is reducing our cost of doing business. And the thing I like about Hydro-Québec is it doesn't hurt the businesses that are already here in Massachusetts because it's cheaper than what we actually pay for electricity now. And as a state that has a very deep and rich technology footprint, the cost of electricity really matters to us. The other thing I would say about it is Hydro-Québec can produce five times the renewable energy that Cape Wind can produce, which means it would reduce our carbon footprint by five times the amount of carbon that Cape Wind would reduce our footprint by, and we'll do it for a price that's actually at or below what we pay now for electricity. That feels to me like a win-win for all the businesses that are here and for the folks who want to see us reduce our carbon footprint. The other thing I would say about this is if you pursue something like Hydro-Québec that doesn't drive up our cost of electricity, it creates openings and opportunities for other renewable and alternative energy supplies and sources. And I think the state's decision to put out an RFP on this and to give a lot of different potential opportunities a chance to bid on it was the right way to go. And what I've said all along about Cape Wind is it's an enormously big bet. It sucks up a ton of money on both the ratepayer side and the taxpayer side for a solution that doesn't appear to me to be a better solution than many of the other ones that are already there.
Another question on a different topic, and this one deals with the 10th District. As you know, this has been
the
10th Congressional District,
okay.
the Jeff Perry, Bill Keating race to replace the retiring Bill Delahunt.
Yep.
As you know, there was a lot of press earlier this week because you and Jeff Perry appeared at an event together. Jeff Perry has been criticized because of a role he played in an illegal strip search. And he didn't do the strip search, but the role he played in it. You've supported him, and you still support Jeff Perry.
I do. The most important thing to me is that Sean Flanagan, who was the fellow who committed
the crime.
Scott
Flanagan, I think.
Was it Bob Flanagan?
I think Scott Flanagan. Flanagan,
okay.
Is the last name.
Flanagan.
You're right. Yes, sure. Flanagan.
Officer Flanagan was caught, arrested, tried, convicted, and put in jail where he belonged. Probably not for as long a period of time as I would have liked or the girl's family or the girl would have liked. I've known Jeff for a number of years. I think Washington spends too much money. I think state government spends too much money. There were about eight or nine candidates at that rally down on the Cape, including Jeff, and I support all of those candidates who believe that we need to get our spending under control both at the state and federal level and get serious about dealing with some of the structural deficits that we have in state government and federal government.
So you feel that the character issues, as Bill Keating called them, are not they don't disturb you. This is a candidate you support.
I'm running against a guy for governor who hasn't been honest with the voters about the $2 billion deficit we face next year or what his plans are for dealing with that issue. And I think fundamentally for most voters at this point in time, the single biggest issue they're worried about are the pocketbook stuff, jobs, taxes, and spending. And that's really what I've been focusing on and I'm going to continue to focus on.
Charlie Baker, another question that you've been asked many times, but I'm sure...
I only got about one more minute here, Sasha.
Sure. So I'll make this my final question then. You know, many times you've been asked this, but I wonder if your thinking on it changes day to day. So many people were so excited when you ran. You know, they really felt that if there is going to be a next Republican governor, it would be you. People have repeatedly said, this guy is great when you get to know him. People who've worked for you speak so highly of you. That doesn't seem to have translated in the campaign, and I'm wondering why you think that hasn't happened.
I'm neck and neck with an incumbent governor who's a close friend of the president. I get into a race in which I was running against two statewide office holders, having never run statewide before. I actually feel very good about our campaign, and I feel very good about the race we've won. And I also feel we're giving voters a very clear choice. If they want 4 more years of higher taxes, more spending, and fewer jobs, they can vote for Governor Patrick. But if they want somebody who's put real plans, as the Boston Globe acknowledged in its editorial, to reform state government on the table and has the chops and the capacity to get a lot of those reforms accomplished, then we'll focus on reducing the tax burden on Massachusetts families and businesses and focus on job creation, they can vote for me. And I think that's exactly where I wanted to be and what I wanted to accomplish when I got into the race.
If you don't win, do you know what comes next?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. Charlie Baker, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, Sasha, take care.
You too. Charlie Bye-bye. Baker is the Republican candidate for governor. Tomorrow we'll be talking to the independent candidate, Tim Cahill. To hear our previous interviews with Governor Deval Patrick and Green Rainbow candidate Jill Stein, visit our website, wbur.org/Boston. Stay with us. Coming up in just a minute, closing arguments were made today in the federal corruption trial of City Councilor Chuck Turner. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.